case number 14-1009 et al. Alliance of Nonprofit Mailers et al. Petitioners versus Postal Regulatory Commission. Mr. Clement for petitioner, United States Postal Service. Ms. Levy for petitioners, Alliance of Nonprofit Mailers et al. And Mr. Tenney for the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Paul Clement for the Postal Service. The Great Recession had a devastating effect on mail volume. The Commission recognized both that the Great Recession was an extraordinary and exceptional circumstance that substantially reduced mail volume and that a rate increase was necessary. Nonetheless, the Commission made a number of errors that significantly understated the impact of the Great Recession on mail volume, which in turn artificially reduced the amount of the exigent rate relief. Let me begin with the most obvious and least defensible of these errors, the application of the so-called count once rule. The Commission's count once rule arbitrarily ignored cumulative volume losses during the height of the Great Recession and credited the service only with marginal year-on-year additional incremental decreases in mail volume. To try to illustrate this as simply as possible, imagine, if you will, that mail volume at the beginning of the Great Recession is at 10 million pieces of mail. Then the first year of the Great Recession, adjusted for electronic diversion, an issue I'm happy to get back to, but adjusted for electronic diversion, let's say after the first year, mail volume drops 1 million to 9 million pieces of mail. Then in the second year of the Great Recession, it drops an additional 1 million pieces to 8 million. Now, as a matter of simple arithmetic, it seems undeniable that the Postal Service has lost 3 million pieces of mail in those 2 years, 8 plus 9 is 17, and the baseline would be 20. 20 minus 17 is 3. But under the Commission's approach to this issue, the count once rule, the Postal Service is only credited with 2 million pieces of lost mail. Their view is that once you lose that mail in the first year of the recession, that's tough. You just have to adjust to it that year, even though you're in the height of the Great Recession. Now, that is arbitrary and capricious, both on its face and in the context of the rest of the order. It's absurd to suggest that the Postal Service in the height of the Great Recession is supposed to adjust on a year-to-year basis to losses of volume. But worse than that, it's inconsistent with the rest of the order in two different places. First, in the context of the new normal test, which is an additional test that's applied to artificially stop counting volume losses. In the new normal test, they actually have a specific test for when the service can predict new mail volume and adjust to the loss of volume. And for purposes of applying the new normal test, the commission recognizes that the Postal Service needs at least until the point at which the Great Recession stops getting worse to be able to adjust.
The difficulty with your position is that you didn't want to stop even at the new normal date. Your position before the agency was, or before the commission was, that you got to keep counting and keep counting those millions forever under a causation theory of analysis.
For the first part of the test, mm-hmm. it's true that we have a beef both with the count once rule and with the new normal rule, and I'm happy to explain in detail why we have a beef with the new normal rule as well.
Did you even argue to the commission that the problem with count once is that you have to at least count it through the period of the new normal?
We did
not. As opposed to forever, for 20 years.
The new normal, we argued vociferously to the commission that they should count the cumulative losses.
Now, for how long?
What's that?
For how long?
For purposes of the due-to analysis, we argued that they should count them. We didn't put a stopping date on that, and the data that we actually initially gave them, we told them that they should count it through 2012. Mm-hmm. In some of the back and forth, we gave them also figures showing how you could count that for 2014. And again, I'm happy to talk.
So we're still counting. So your position isn't the only issue before us, then, whether they properly rejected your position, because you never gave them the chance to say that count once should stop, should map on to the time period for new normal.
Well, with all due respect, this is our opportunity to explain why the order that was issued is arbitrary and capricious. And the order is arbitrary and capricious because the count once rule is incoherent and inconsistent with the rest of the order.
But you have the burden to show what was due to and to make the showing of causation that they required based on after the remand and they set up the rule. And you came in and they said, you said it's going to be due to if it starts with that $1 million and we're going to keep going until, for now at least, the present day and keep counting those millions again and again and again every year. And it wasn't arbitrary and capricious to reject that.
Well, with all due respect, we think it is. But if you're going to reject that, you still have to adopt a rule in rejecting it that is not itself arbitrary and capricious. And we came in, and we had a back and forth with them, and we gave them numbers that make it very easy for them to calculate the cumulative volume losses at whatever date they say is appropriate. So you can calculate from the numbers we affirmatively gave them. It's not like we gave them, like, you know, black box and we said, this is our position. Here's the only number that supports this. And so we did not give them an all or nothing proposition. We gave them numbers that documented what we think are our volume losses. And again, the initial data package was for the covered years 2008 to 2012. And so we showed continuing volume losses through 2012, which we continue to believe is clearly the case. Now, I want to, if I could, stay with count once for a second, but the problem with new normal is it basically identifies the point at which things stopped getting worse in the Great Recession, but it then kind of incoherently said, and at that point we're going to stop counting anything. But anybody can recognize that when you hit the trough of the Great Recession and the macroeconomic figures first start turning positive, that doesn't mean there aren't volume losses in those years. So we have a real beef with new normal, too. But at a minimum, the count once rule, which is a billion-dollar mistake, is inconsistent both with the new normal analysis that where the commission clearly recognizes the service can't adjust on the fly every year to volume losses from the previous year, and it's even more dramatically inconsistent with the 30 pages of analysis in Part 5 of the opinion that under the necessary prong, which is where we believe this analysis should be anyways, where the service actually did an admirable job of adjusting those fixed costs that they could. And in that part of the opinion,
do we
the commission
have to accept your view that this should be analyzed under necessary to rule for you on this prong?
No. I mean, we think that's the right way to interpret the statute.
Well,
we
right or wrong, I mean, isn't our standard isn't right or wrong. And if their view, as I understand it, was we have to decide what's due to. And that's a beginning and an end point. And once we know what is due to, we'll look at what you ask for to take care of that due to, and we'll see essentially if your proposed remedy is necessary, equitable, and whatever the other word is. And so we'll apply the test that way, as opposed to using necessary to help define the limitations on what is due to, which is your position.
Well, with respect, it's the Commission's position, too. The Commission is all over the map on this. But when they're rejecting certain of the mailer's objections, they specifically say, well, wait a second, if what you're concerned about is how quickly the Postal Service reacted to the Great Recession, that's really something we take into account under the necessary prong. So this is not just our position, it's their position. But to be clear and as responsive as I can be, look, we think that the way they've interpreted due to, by putting all these mitigation concerns in due to, when they have a separate part of the statute that much more appropriately houses those concerns, we think that flunks even under step two of Chevron. That's our position.
But the reasoning that they gave is that it's a new normal. And so if something is normal, then it's no longer extraordinary. And so isn't that basically how they would justify this being, you know, proper under the due to, because it's due to these extraordinary circumstances, and so at some point it's not extraordinary anymore, it's just normal?
That's not really the reasoning I think they used, to be fair. I think they basically just said at that point you ought to be able to adjust, and if you don't adjust at that point, it's really your failure to adjust, essentially, that is the cause, no longer the Great Recession.
Well, let me ask you this, a crazy hypothetical, but let's suppose a meteor struck the United States and knocked out 10% of the country.
Right.
That would be obviously an extraordinary event, but at some point it would stop being extraordinary in that with respect to the Postal Service, they would have to just adjust to, you know, a different level of service based on the fact that 10% of the nation had been destroyed by this meteor, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Now, we would say that that really ought to be, the work for that ought to be done under the necessary prong of the statute as opposed to the due-to prong. We think, and the Commission agrees with us, that really the due-to is just the first step in the analysis, and you just identify the volume of lost mail, and that's sort of your outer limit for how much of an exigent rate increase that you could
but
get.
But why would that be the case? In other words, if you have this exigent circumstance, and this particular process is keyed to that, in other words, that it was something extraordinary, doesn't it have to be discrete in some way? Now, the loss of 10% of the population, let's say, is going to go on forever. So it can't be that simply it's a consequence of that acute discontinuity, right?
Well, I would take issue with you, which I would say if you have, I don't see that discrete requirement in the statute. So
well,
I think
exigency must mean something. Otherwise, it's a meaningless phrase.
Well, exigency actually is just a shorthand, right?
Right.
Under the statute. So the statutory terms are extraordinary and
exceptional.
Exceptional.
Yeah. And I think if you had something like a meteor wiping out permanently 10% of the population, if you had California seceding from the Union, I would say that that's something that creates a permanent loss due to. Now, that doesn't mean you get a permanent increase. You deal with the rest of that under the necessary. But if I could be clear about this,
why do they have to deal with that under necessary? Why can't they say that after a while it's just no longer due to that? Other things happen as time goes by, whether it's internet or failures to adjust properly as a business matter by the Postal Service. And so at some point we just lose confidence that the driving force for that change remains the meteor or the recession.
Okay, well, there is a specific part of the statute that specifically addresses the question of whether they're doing enough to adjust to the new circumstance. And that is the necessary prong of the statute. So there might be hypotheticals out there where there is over time a diminution of due to. But I guess what I'd like to leave you with is, in addition to the argument that we think the principal work for that is in the necessary context, the new normal test, just like the count one test here, is just a misapplication of that concept. And I hope I've left you with the impression that the count one rule is just irrational and inconsistent with the new normal rule and with the necessary analysis in the opinion. But the new normal rule itself is little better because there's a fundamental mismatch between what that new normal test measures and the consequence of a positive test. So what it's measuring is when the Great Recession stops getting worse. It measures when things bottom out. So it looks to when macroeconomic changes turn positive and when mail volume turns positive. It doesn't look for when they get back to some particular level or even some
quantitative. Predictability, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's the point at which prediction starts to get predictable. And I have two problems with the test. And the first problem is really with the first two prongs, and the second problem is with the second two prongs. The problem with the first two prongs is if you ask the question, when did things stop getting worse, that would be a pretty good question to ask if what you propose to do is at that point stop counting incremental losses. Because at that point, you could say, look, at that point, we don't have to, you know, you say that there was some lagged effect and, you know, therefore you lost even more incremental volume in 2012. Well, we think when things stop getting worse, at that point, we're going to stop counting the incremental losses. That would be, I think, a defensible rule. But what they did is they identified the point of time at which things stopped getting worse, and then they said, we're not going to count any other losses at that point at all. And that doesn't make any sense. At the point in the Great Recession, when things stopped getting worse, there were still huge impacts on mail volume that were due to the Great Recession. Just because
at some point, they've got to decide some sort of causal limitations on due to. And you say things stopped getting worse. They say things started recovering. And we have to come up with some end limit. We're not going to take the go on until 2014, and we think a good end limit is when things started recovering, the Postal Service should have started recovering, and at that point, that's how we're going to define the statutory term of due to extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. It could be defined really, really broadly, but we don't think, looking at the statute as a whole, that's what we should do. And why, given our very deferential standard of review, is that not rational?
Well, I think it is arbitrary and capricious to make, and I think it's true both in the abstract and in the context of the specific order. So I think to basically say that we are going to look to the losses due to the Great Recession, but at the point that things start to get a little bit better, fully recognizing the point that mail volume is still billions of pieces less than it would be but for the Great Recession, for them to at that point stop counting, I think, is irrational. But it's particularly irrational in light of the rest of the order, because...
But would it continue to be irrational if instead they said, there are a lot of things going on at once? This isn't a perfect world in which we continue. You know, the Great Recession is a light switch, and we know when it starts and when it ends, and nothing else is causing anything. There is a confluence of factors here, including Internet, human behavior changes, alleged inefficient management by the Postal Service, and a Great Recession in the middle of it. And we have to sort it out. And we have to do it with confidence given the structure of the statutory scheme. And we have confidence from the period until things started getting, 2008, until things started getting better. But after that, what was the primary driver is no longer something we feel confident in saying was the Great Recession. If that's what they had said, would that be rational?
That would be a much stronger order to try
rational?
To defend.
Would that be rational?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to – I would probably be up here making an argument, but it would be a much weaker argument. And I do think – but that is not what they said. They adopted an arbitrary approach to this. And if they'd said what you said, especially if they provided notice, because this whole new normal thing was sprung on everybody and these four factors, if they provided notice that that's the way they were coming at, that's something you can attack with – follow-up econometric studies. You know, we actually feel pretty robust, and I hope I get a chance to talk about it, about how we counted for electronic diversion. But if the point is at 2011 you lose confidence in the ability to differentiate these factors, that's something that's at least a target to shoot at that you can test. But to have an arbitrary line that really doesn't make any sense.
Well, when they said up front going in that the test was going to be the net impact of the Great Recession. So why isn't that notice that you're going to have to sort out all of these different causal factors, and we're going to try to identify what we can really confidently trace to the Great Recession, leaving them with exactly the rationale I just provided?
Because first of all, I mean, we'll take net. We're trying to show net. Start with the cumulative volume losses. Those are net cumulative volume losses due to the Great Recession in the height of the Great Recession before they say there's a new normal.
Then
with respect to the new normal itself, I think, you know, if you look at page 53 of the Postal Service's reply submission, which is Joint Appendix 1825, I know it's a long joint appendix, but it sort of shows the basic problem with the new normal analysis is that you can get to, and it's a hypothetical that's provided in the reply comments, but it basically shows that you can be in, like, 2011, and macroeconomic factors and mail volume can just turn positive, and you're still hitting a huge negative number that's not attributable to electronic diversion. It's not like in 2011, magically there's some inflection point for electronic diversion. None of the studies showed that. What it shows is what common sense tells you, is that in 2011, things aren't getting any worse, but they're still really lousy. And the cause of things being really lousy didn't become something else like a meteor hitting. The reason things are still really lousy in 2010 and 2011 is the Great Recession, and you should rationally account for that. And if I could get my last point just on this, is that
I'm
making this point sort of as...
I'm sorry. I'll let you make your next sentence, too. But
sure.
On this one, did your analysis distinctly identify, did you have a variable that distinctly identified the loss due to electronic diversion?
We didn't have a variable, but we took it into account, and if I could explain that after I finish the sentence.
Mm-hmm,
so the sentence I wanted to finish is simply that in addition to being sort of not arbitrary and capricious in the abstract, you can't be arbitrary and capricious within the four corners of your order. And if you look at what the Commission says as to factor four of new normal and ability to adjust, and compare it to the much more extensive analysis about what they say about the Postal Service's ability to adjust in the necessary prong, those are completely inconsistent. In the latter half of the opinion, they recognize that these are fixed costs, network costs, that reductions in mail volume they just can't take into account on the margin. And so even if in the abstract, in interpreting the statute, you could put all of this analysis in the due-to and none of it in the necessary, surely you have to be consistent with what you say under the due-to prong as to mitigation efforts and what you say about mitigation efforts under the necessary prong. And if you say a lot more about it in the necessary prong, then in the due to prong, they have to be consistent. Now on to diversion. There's a reason we didn't have a specific variable. And we explained this, which is it was our expert econometrician's view that there wasn't any longer at 2008, 2009, 2010 a good variable for measuring electronic diversion, because what had traditionally been used is broadband penetration. And at the time you start hitting 2007, 2008, broadband penetration is effectively 100%. Everybody who sort of wants broadband has got it already, and sure, maybe, you know, as costs go down, there's going to be a little bit of effect, but it's no longer a good variable. So what do? Do they say, forget it, we're just not going to take into account electronic diversion? No. What they do is they look at what was the trend in effectively 2007. And they do it for each class of mail. And we give you the specifics in footnote 4 on page 8 of our intervener's brief for standard first-class mail, individual pieces of first-class mail. And what that shows is that there's a 4.3% each year negative decline due to electronic diversion. And so what we do is we apply that 4.3% rate every year through the Great Recession. We don't make the cumulative error that the Commission does. We apply it every year. And that's why we separate out 39 billion pieces of mail due to electronic diversion right off the top, because that's the effect of that trend line being projected downward for each year of the Great Recession. And we're doing that, like I said, in a dynamic way. So the first year we take out 4.3%, we then take out 4.3% of that reduced volume, and so on year in, year on, year out. So we account for a tremendous amount of electronic diversion.
It was a static amount, though, right?
What's that?
It was a static amount? It was set amount, 4.3?
Yeah, the trend line static. It's not a static amount. Each year.
I mean the 4.3% stayed the same.
Sure.
Right, and so if the Commission thought that didn't account for the sort of synergistic effect of the recession and increased advances in technology that make things easier for people to do, you know, you can send an email in your hand now without booting up your computer, is that a flaw in your analysis?
I don't think so. It may show that, you know, the 4.3, I mean, you could quibble about the 4.3 number. Maybe you have a theory. It wasn't presented. None of the objectors really presented it, a theory as to why that number should be growing sort of exponentially or something. But
well, I thought the Commission was fairly clear that it was wrong to sort of start and stop with broadband, that, in fact, there were all these expansions, and the expansions made electronic communications so much easier. And so you had the burden to differentiate what was being caused by the recession, net by the recession, and not by things that where the recession expedited or synergistically increased the rate and number of people who would just stop using mail because of both convenience and it's cheaper in economic times.
With all due respect, I think you're attributing a lot more sort of granularity to the Commission's concerns than they ever gave us. And I think you're also underestimating the extent to which the 4.3 number, which is applied year over year, so it is dynamic in that sense, it separates 39 billion pieces of mail. Now, I mean, look, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is that really doesn't have a lot to do with why the Commission decided to apply the count once rule or the new normal rule. Most of that concern about electronic diversion is why they didn't accept the linear intervention variables. It was mostly their concern about that. I think it fairly sort of matches up that way. But I just want to give you sort of a sense of scale here, because the Postal Service's best estimate through that five-year period that they came up with the original data was that there was 190 billion pieces of mail lost due to the Great Recession. Now, from that 190 billion number, they'd already subtracted out 39 billion pieces of mail, okay? So what the Commission ultimately credits after it applies the count once rule, after it applies new normal, after it rejects the linear variables, is 25 billion pieces of mail. So what that means is you could triple the amount that was due to electronic diversion. You go from 39 billion to 120 billion. And if you did that, that still leaves 70 billion pieces of mail. That's still basically three times what we actually got. So this electronic diversion concern is not what explains the order of magnitude reduction of our request. And so I do think in that sense it's a little bit of a red herring. The other thing,
I want to get back to the new normal, new normal argument. You make an example in your brief of someone who loses her job and therefore can't afford cable anymore, And so, you know, there's 12 pieces of mail lost a year from no cable bill being sent out. And then, you know, she gets her job back, and then you potentially, and then I guess those are recovered. But let's suppose either she never gets her job back, or at the end of the recession, she gets a job, but it's not as good of a job as she had before, and she can't afford cable anymore. So she doesn't have cable anymore, and she gets a job back in 2010, but she can't afford it, so she doesn't have it in 2011, 2012. Are those losses still due to the recession?
I would say yes, in the sense that the reason she can't get a good job or the same kind of job that she got before is because of the Great Recession and the continuing effects of the Great Recession. But what I want to emphasize is that get back to this disconnect point, because I think it's important, which is, you know, the new normal, as its name suggests, is almost like a concession that this Great Recession is different. And so at some point, the service is just going to have to adjust to the fact that things are just never going to be the way they were before. And this isn't like a typical recession where you dig down, but then like 3 years later, you're back onto the trend line where you would have been without the Great Recession. Now, there's two observations I'd like to make about that. First of all, that whole way of thinking about it, that there is now a new normal, is really a recognition that there are significant losses, ongoing losses, that are due to the Great Recession. And this is different because we're not getting back to normal. This is a new normal. Now, if you made that observation and correctly applied the new normal to sort of make that recognition, which we don't think the Commission has done, at that point, I think it might be fair for the Commission to say, all right, guys, this is an exigent rate increase. This is not a permanent rate increase. So at the point that you've really identified what is a new normal, at that point, you know, fun's fun, but you're going to have to either go back to Congress or we're going to have to do some kind of broader reconsideration of this, but that's where we're going to sort of cut things off. But that's not what the Commission's reasoning was, and it's not what they did with the new normal. As I said, there's this big disconnect, because what they used to identify the new normal, if you were looking for that new normal, you'd be looking for things not to just turn barely up. You'd be looking for postal volumes to stabilize at some new rate. That's the kind of variable you'd be looking for. So there continues to be this disconnect that what they call new normal, it's not a new normal. I mean, the first two economic factors that are driving it are, you know, they shouldn't call it new normal at all. They should call it the bottom of the trough.
Well, to follow up on that, it seems as if there are different kinds of exigencies. I mean, are extraordinary circumstances. One, like, you know, the meteor or something like that, you really might be able to quantify exactly what that meant in terms of lost volume. But something like what is being called here the Great Recession, if you looked at some of the variables that were being used here, those trends started well before what was the recession, right? And so maybe from 2000, maybe from 2002, even longer than that. So in effect, at some point, you have to acknowledge that there's a structural shift here that, you know, looks different because it really is different. It's not a recession that, you know, has this acute stage and then a trough and then goes back up, but actually adjusts to a lower level that stays lower.
And Judge Brown, let me try to say two things in response to that. One is, to the extent you're trying to suggest that there are structural factors at work here that are unrelated to the recession, I actually think that's wrong, and I think our econometric analysis did a very good job of weeding out those concerns. And so if you think that electronic diversion is something that started in 2000 or earlier, which in fact it did.
I think the way you've dealt with electronic diversion. I was simply saying there may have been even other things in terms of the overall economy that started far out and had an effect on this. And the bottoming out of the real estate market may have exacerbated that. It's true. So it was a more sharp discontinuity. But that doesn't mean that was all recession. It was a long-term trend.
I agree with that, but here's, like, at just the broadest levels, here's what the numbers really show, that if you start in 2000, after a historical period where mail volume increases year on year, and just that, you know, every year there's more people and there's more mail, about 2000, it starts flatlining. And what's basically happening is population growth and I'm oversimplifying to be sure, but electronic diversion and population growth basically start canceling each other out. So through 2000 to 2008, the overall volume level is basically flat. And then 2008, it just goes off a cliff. And then in 2008, 2009, 2010, you're way down here. And it just barely starts to recover. And what the new normal language sort of conveys is this insight that, oh, I get it. You know, since you're now here and now this is really going to be on this level, not this level for the long term, at some point you guys got to, you know, sort of adjust to the new normal and just get over it. So we're gonna put an end point at this at some point. But with all due respect, that's not the logic that supports what the commission actually did. Because what the commission actually did is not measure the new normal, which would have looked for this new plateau. It really just, there's no denying it. The factors they look are when do the macroeconomic variables turn positive. That captures the inflection point where you get the bottom of the trough. And at what point does mail volume start to become positive again? And the question is, is it arbitrary and capricious to basically say at that point, we're going to stop counting entirely? Not that we're going to say, you know, and again, if I were up here trying to say that they said, you know, after the fourth year, you know, basically there was no delta in mail volume. And so since between 3 and 4 you had complete stability in mail volume, at that point, I'm just done giving you the exigency. I'm just not going to recognize it as being exigent anymore. I mean, I'd probably still be up here, but boy, would I have a weaker case. But what I have, I think, is a very strong, almost facial case of arbitrary and capriciousness because they have a test for the new normal that measures the wrong thing and then imposes a consequence that just doesn't follow from what they've measured.
All right. Can I just ask one more fact question? Am I right that under your model that you proposed to them, this last year would have been the highest losses ever from the recession?
Yes, it is true that there are still some incremental losses that we attribute to the Great Recession for like 2013 and 2014. And I think that's perfectly defensible. You may not have found it terribly intuitive, but I think it's perfectly defensible if you look at some of the numbers that we've given you about where credit card account holding is, where real estate mortgage account holding is, which are the kind of things that drive mail volume. But again, if that's where your concern is, you could do one of two things. You could apply what they called the new normal test and said, look, at 2010, 2011, we're going to stop recognizing any additional incremental losses. Because that's as bad as it's going to get. And at that point, when things start to get better, obviously, you're going to start getting less and less volume each year. But we've measured an inflection point, and so we're going to treat it like an inflection point. That would be one approach. Another approach would be to say, look, at a certain point, it just becomes too far out to confidently measure it. So at a certain point, we're just going to cut this off. But I think then you'd be measuring something very different.
So, but why is your too far out that we aren't confident rule the one they had to do as opposed to the too far out we're no longer confident rule that they did? It's simply because you think things are starting on the upswing and that's just too soon.
I think it's a combination of two things, Your Honor. One is, and what I would call sort of kind of abstract arbitrary capriciousness and kind of as applied arbitrary capriciousness. The abstract one is there's just a fundamental failure of logic, if you will, between what they're measuring and the consequences of it. And I just don't think you can get those two to match up. But then the as-applied arbitrary and capriciousness is, even if you accept that it is within their step two prerogative to have overlap between the due-to inquiry and the necessary inquiry, and there's just no way to look at the fourth factor on the new normal test, the ability to adjust, and not understand that they're asking the same question at the necessary step, even if they can have the test in both places, the answer has to be the same. And you can't have one paragraph of analysis that says, hey, by 2010, you guys should be moving forward, and 30 pages of analysis that says, boy, you've got these network costs, and, you guys would love to go to five-day mail, but Congress won't let you, so you've got all of these fixed obligations, and lost volume is not like a new opportunity for you. It's just a way of saying you're going to lose contribution to your fixed costs.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Clement.
May it please the Court. My name is David Levy. I'm arguing for the mailers, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Let me start with the facts to follow up on Judge Millett's last question. The law required the Postal Service to prove how much of its losses were due to the recession. The recession undoubtedly was severe, but even at its bottom in 2009, real U.S. gross domestic product, GDP, declined by 2.6%. According to the Postal Service's model, over the same period from 2007 to 2009, it suffered a 17% loss in volume due to the recession. By 2012, the supposedly recession-related losses had ballooned to 26% from the peak, and the losses will continue to increase year after year forever. And that's on pages 1991 and 1992 of the Joint Appendix. The Commission disallowed most of the requested losses on causation and other grounds, but allowed some. The mailers are challenging some but not all of the dollars that the Commission allowed. And the reason is a arbitrary and capricious inconsistency between the findings in one place and another, inconsistency with the evidence, and a failure to address our comments. Elsewhere in the decision, in rejecting most of the losses, the Commission found that the Postal Service had the burden of proof on due to or causation, and that its statistical model was too defective to meet this burden. Didn't have variables for electronic diversion. The macroeconomic variables like employment and investment explained only a small part of the losses the Postal Service was claiming, and that the trend and intervention variables that the Postal Service had stuffed into the model were devoid of economic content, and that the Postal Service hadn't offered adequate extrinsic evidence providing economic content to those variables. The Commission, however, contradicted itself in a couple of significant areas. First of all, it allowed $10 billion approximately of losses based on volume losses associated with the nonlinear intervention variable for standard mail. That was one of those content-free variables that you would have to import extrinsic meaning into. And the Commission said that it was crediting the volume losses associated with this variable to the recession because the nonlinear variable declined about the same time as the investment variable, the macroeconomic variable, fell, and then rose again at about the same time. And so the Commission said this proves that more likely than not that the nonlinear intervention variable proves cause is related to the recession.
Would you agree? I mean, the Commission has a very difficult determination to be made here in trying to look at a very, very complicated national economic picture, not just economic, technological and sociological and how people communicate, everything going on at the same time. And it had to sort out, try to identify from all of the confluence of factors the amount for which the recession itself was economically responsible. And so you disagree on this edge, they disagree on that edge. But what I read the Commission saying, tell me how I'm wrong, is that looking at all the models proposed to us, we have confidence about this much for this period of time, that we feel we have the confidence we're required by the statute to attribute to the recession as opposed to all of these other factors. Why isn't that rational? You're going to disagree, they're going to disagree, but they did the best they could given the complexity of the issue in our very, very deferential standard of review.
Your Honor, you've stated the standard of review correctly. This is a highly technical and complex area, and the Commission's findings are entitled to a great deal of deference as a result. However, that deference isn't unlimited, as the State Farm line of cases make clear. And where there's, for example, an internal contradiction in the Commission's reasoning, then it may still be set aside, notwithstanding that deference. And that was the problem here. In this case, they basically said correlation equals causation because the nonlinear intervention variable marched down when the investment variable went down and sort of went up when the investment variable went up. We're going to infer causation from correlation, and that's the basis for awarding $10 million.
I know everyone says correlation isn't always causation, but sometimes it is. And sometimes they do actually coincide, and they sort of looked at everything else and said, we have confidence for this period.
But sometimes it isn't, and the Commission has held that it isn't, and this Court has held it isn't, as in the Tex-Tin case, that it isn't enough to establish causation when there's a significant apparent alternative cause lurking in the background. And here, of course, that's electronic diversion, and there may be others.
Well, but, I mean, again, in Texton, there was a significant apparent and likely sole or exclusive. It could have been responsible for the entire thing in Texton, I think it was arsenic contamination or whatever it was. That contamination could have been entirely from that source. But I don't think your argument is that the problem here is that they didn't realize that this is all about electronic diversion or other social factors or other economic factors.
No, Your Honor.
Okay,
taking that extreme of position.
Sure, and they had to sort of sort these things out. So that seems a harder context in which we can find a problem with correlation versus causation when they found for a certain period of time we're comfortable saying causation. They did say causation.
Here's the difference. Where, for example, the Postal Service's model showed losses that were associated with the cyclical macroeconomic variables, we haven't challenged those variables. Our expert, Professor Lundblad, argued that you should have about $700 million awarded to the Postal Service as recovery relating to those variables. The problem here with the nonlinear intervention variable is that variable has no intrinsic content. It's just a number that the Postal Service stuffed into the equation, into the model, and you have not only near correlation, but you also have the problem which is that electronic diversion could explain it, because as the Commission itself found a few pages earlier in the decision, electronic diversion, contrary to the Postal Service's evidence, electronic diversion exploded beginning in 2007. So you have an obvious alternative cause, and in those circumstances, the Commission and this Court have held that you can't simply infer a causation from correlation. There was a second problem with the nonlinear.
What if the Commission thought that the two intersected, that in fact, yes, you had a lot of diversion to electronics, but that was accelerated due to the Great Recession. People suddenly were willing to spend time trying to figure out how to operate these devices to do their mail because they needed to save money, pinch pennies. Businesses could save enormous amounts of money by doing this. So if they found that the two came together, then why would it be wrong for them to attribute that to the Great Recession?
They didn't find that, though. The Postal Service argued it, and the Commission rejected it. It found there was no evidence that there was any significant increase in electronic diversion as a result of the recession. The other problem with this dollar amount.
So where is that finding? You said that's a finding?
Hold on a second. We cited in our brief. It's on page 1991 of the Joint Appendix. There is nothing before the Commission that suggests changes in long-run trends or changes in the rate of electronic diversion are due to the Great Recession. 1991.
Okay.
And then it continues as MPA notes, that's our coalition. And we had in our comments evidence supporting that conclusion. The other problem, if I may, with that particular correlation equal to causation point, is there wasn't good correlation. If you actually looked at the data showed that the nonlinear intervention, that the investment variable, which was the macro variable, declined until 2009. And then has increased in 2010 and has rebounded every year since then. The nonlinear intervention variable took a very different course. In 2009, it went down to 2009. 2010, it got worse. And then every year since then, it has flatlined. It has no improvement. So the two variables don't have the same shape. So the factual predicate of correlation equals causation is absent because there's not really even correlation.
Are all the charts that are in your brief ones that you submitted to the Commission?
Yes, they were copied from the ones that we submitted to the Commission, and basically the same as or transformations of the charts that the Postal Service put in as briefs. I mean, we're having a fight over how to interpret them, but there is not a fight over what the numbers are. We also objected to the $5 million, billion dollars in losses attributed to the trend component of the employment variable or single piece first class mail. And this is something that I think Your Honor or one of the other members of the panel alluded to when Mr. Clement was up, which is that we put in evidence showing that the decline in the mail volume related to the employment variable began in 2002 or earlier, and that most of the decline in the variable beginning in 2007 was not due to an acceleration caused by the recession, but was caused by the continuation of the existing trend. And that's true whether or not you truncate or cut off the data in 2012, as we told the commission, or in 2010. In either case, the original trend is responsible for most of the decline in mail volume. We made that point to the commission. The commission didn't respond to that. And that is under State Farm is an error, notwithstanding the deference otherwise owed to the commission. Let me talk briefly about, respond to something Mr. Clement said about the new normal. The fundamental reality of the new normal is, unlike the hypotheticals that the Postal Service has offered, in the real world, effects of recessions don't last forever. One of three things happen. Either demand recovers. Number two is the volume would have gone in away anyway. Take the hypothetical of the laid-off worker who terminates the cable subscription. It's quite possible that even if the employee had kept his or her job, they would have stopped using mail to pay bills because they would have switched to electronic diversion a year later. Or third, the enterprise adjusts its costs to deal with the reduced demand. And those are factors which we believe have to be considered under the statute. Whether you consider them under the due-to prong, under the honest economical efficient management prong, or as Judge Wilkins suggested, under the extraordinary or exceptional circumstances, because after a while it isn't extraordinary or exceptional. The problem here is the Postal Service put in no evidence on the rate of attenuation. Their model showed that the losses would worsen forever, that the mail volume losses caused by the recession would never recover, that the Postal Service would never adjust its costs. And so the Postal Service had a failure.
That's fine, but the commission didn't go with that. And so the issue here is I thought you were quibbling with the commission's decision.
Oh, no, I'm defending the commission against the Postal Service appeals on the new normal. We're not challenging the new normal restriction or the count once. I'm defending it now. I'm sorry, I should have put on a transition sentence. Given the failure of proof, the commission had basically two choices. It could deny the increase entirely for failure to meet this critical proof element, or it could try to come up with some rough justice middle ground. And as this court held in similar circumstances in the UPS case, 199 F3rd, I don't know the page site off the top of my head, that in these circumstances, the commission makes a rough guess or even a rough swag when that's all the best they can do given the limited information they have, that is a reasonable approach to take. And that's all I have. Unless there are questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I want to start by talking about the differences between the due to part of the statute and the necessary part of the statute that was focused on earlier. The principal difference is the necessary standard is primarily a forward-looking standard. And so the question there is going to be whether the rate adjustment that the Postal Service has requested is reasonable and equitable and necessary is the full phrase, but focusing on the necessary part, whether the Postal Service really needs it if it's going to perform, under, best practices of honest and efficient management. Now, the thing that comes in here and one thing that distinguishes it from the due-to part of the analysis, or actually there are two pieces that really distinguish it. One is this is more of an analysis of what the Postal Service is actually doing and proposing to do rather than analysis of potential responses. In other words, what could the Postal Service have been expected to do? Another critical difference is that in determining whether it's necessary under best practices of honest and efficient management, you take into account the circumstances that the Postal Service is in, which includes a lot of challenges that the Postal Service faces, which the Commission readily acknowledged, that are not extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. So, for example, there is an obligation to provide funding for the retiree health benefit accounts. That's an obligation the Postal Service hasn't had sufficient funds to meet. There's the fact that mail volumes are declining for reasons apart from the recession, like electronic diversion. Now, these are all things the Postal Service can say, it's reasonable for us to remedy the problems that we had, the lost volume that we had, by raising rates, because we don't have a lot of choices here, and we've got a lot of problems here. And that's something, all things that the Commission took into account in the necessary part of the analysis, which is forward-looking, saying, okay, given that you've lost this amount of money, you know, is it reasonable and equitable and necessary for you to recover it, and in addition to recover it in the fashion that you're proposing to recover it? So that's the necessary part. There's no inconsistency between that and saying, we're trying to isolate what is due to an extraordinary or exceptional circumstances, isolate that as compared to things, you know, problems that the Postal Service is suffering, which may be real problems, and they have real, you know, they have to try to address them, but that were not due to either extraordinary or exceptional circumstances. And so that brings me to when you're looking at the due to question, and looking particularly at the temporal limitations, which I think are, you know, the heart of the presentation today.
Can I just back up and ask, you can't really surgically delineate the two categories. If part of your necessary analysis is, look, there's only so much the Commission can do, the Postal Service can do, because it's got these service obligations, you know, universal service, 6 days a week service, set in costs and obligations that it can't get out of. That may be both forward-looking but also backward-looking, because you have to go backwards and say, well, how much of that may have been part of the problem as well with the economic losses that they suffered? How do you separate the two?
Right. I mean, I agree with that. We're not the ones trying to surgically delineate them. It's the Postal Service that's saying all of this goes in the necessary box. None of it is relevant to the due-to box. I mean, they're saying anything, you know, any analysis of our ability to respond or any of that.
Well, they're saying you two mix the boxes. You mix both of the boxes.
Well, but as Your Honors, I mean, I think the Commission was quite clear about the distinctions between the two inquiries. The Commission did not say, these two are completely separate. There's nothing that's relevant to one that's also relevant to the other. And I think if anyone is trying to say that, it's the Postal Service, which is saying you figure out due to, and then, but, you know, don't take into account our ability to adjust. That comes later. If I'm not understanding their position correctly, then they can correct me. But the point is, in terms of what the Commission is saying is the necessary inquiry is primarily a forward-looking inquiry, and the necessary inquiry, if you read the pages of the order that discuss it, takes into account all of these factors that are not themselves extraordinary circumstances but are relevant to whether an increase is necessary to respond to extraordinary circumstances.
So one way of characterizing this, I suppose, your point would be that there's no inconsistency in recognizing that the Postal Service is not a very nimble business model, but at the same time saying extraordinary circumstance is discrete and limited.
I think that's right. And to turn specifically to the temporal limitations that were placed within the context of due to, what the commission was tasked with doing is, in some respects, as everyone recognizes, an impossible task of disentangling what of this massive volume loss should be called, you know, due to extraordinary circumstances and what shouldn't. And, of course, although we're talking in terms of volume losses, really the relevant question is the financial impact on the Postal Service, which would be reflected both in the loss of volume, which is the revenue side, which is primarily what we've been talking about today. But, of course, to the extent that the Postal Service is able to respond by reducing costs, then the net financial impact, and that's really what we're talking about here, because we're talking about trying to recover money, then that would affect the net financial impact. And that sort of, that informs some of the inquiries about temporal limitations. So starting with the count once rule, there's both a sort of factual and a legal component to the count once rule, which were both addressed in the order. One is the Postal Service posits that if it loses mail volume in 1 year, then that volume continues to be lost in additional years. Anything else that, you know, if they lose it due to the recession 1 year, it continues to be lost in additional years, and anything else is on top. That's their position. But that's not true even under the Postal Service's own description of things, both in to the Commission and to this Court.
I guess I would rather than your critique of their description, your best explanation of how the count once rule makes sense, given that, at least my understanding, you tell me how I'm wrong, the Commission's rationale is that we got to come up with a number and we can't think of any other limit, although the new normal would have been a natural limit, and we assume they can adjust, but then the new normal rule had a longer period for adjustment. So I'm having a lot of trouble reconciling count once with the new normal analysis.
Okay, well, to start with count once itself, mm-hmm. there were two reasons given in the order. One was the difficulty, if you don't do the count once rule, of actually performing the calculation the Commission is tasked with performing. And the problem comes with the intersection of the recession and other factors. So, for example, if the Postal Service submitted to the Commission didn't dispute this, that one thing that could happen as a result of the recession would be that it would accelerate people's diversion to electronic alternatives. That was something that the Postal Service said a number of times, both in its submissions to this Commission and in its briefing in this Court. Now, if that happened, then in the year where it accelerated, you could count that potentially as a loss due to the recession. You could say the recession made this happen, it wouldn't have happened otherwise. But then, let's say somebody would have eventually stopped paying their cable bill by mail. You know, we don't know exactly when, but we know they would have eventually. They did it sooner because of the recession. We're going to give them credit for that. But then what the Postal Service says is, okay, well, you've counted it as due to the recession in that year. Now we've counted you to count it as that same volume loss is due to the recession.
But I'm very confused as to how this complicated causal analysis requires you to count once, but the new normal looked at those exact same complicated causal analysis and difficulties with figuring out what was the primary driver of losses and gave a broader period of time. I just don't understand how you reconcile it. When you say the question was dealing with a confluence of causal factors, that's exactly what new normal seemed to sort out. What was new normal doing that count once didn't already do?
Well, I don't disagree that the two temporal limitations that the Commission placed on the Postal Service's counting of volume were for similar reasons and accomplished similar things, but they are distinct in several
respects. But they're very different time periods. So, why wouldn't the limitations and time period that you had under the new normal be the same? Why isn't that the measure for counting a volume loss?
Well, let me explain a way in which they're different that might be relevant. So, the new normal basically says at some point, this just has to be over. I think counsel conceded that would be a reasonable, he doesn't think the Commission said it that way, but that would be a reasonable thing to say, that you can't go out indefinitely and say, well, we're still, in 2018, we're still counting volume losses due to the Great Recession. That wasn't the Postal Service's position before the Commission, but that is the heart of sort of the new normal. Now, suppose we find a time we can argue about exactly when the new normal should be, and I intend to do so, but suppose we find a time that's the new normal. Then the Postal Service's view, as I understand it, is, okay, that's it. New normal is the temporal limitation. You don't also need the count once rule. And let me just explain why that is wrong. So basically, let's say volumes are going down during the recession. The recession lasts for a while, okay? And so the Postal Service's view is that they are accumulating volume losses, and not just volume losses, but financial losses, meaning so they didn't have anything in there to say, oh, but our costs reduce at a similar rate or at a different rate or something, so we're only taking a fraction of it. They're just assuming. They're saying volume losses, that's how much we want. So basically, if you just did the new normal, if you said, well, wait to the end, And we'll say, you know, let's say the recession ended in 2011. Then we've got 3 years of volume losses. And they'll say, okay, anything bad that happened to us in terms of mail volumes between 2008 and 2011, we're gonna ask to recover in the form of increased rates from mailers. Now, the problem with that is that doesn't give them any obligation or doesn't build in any expectation that while the recession is going on, nobody thinks they can respond perfectly, no one thinks it's predictable and they can do exactly the right thing, but they should do something, and Congress would expect them to do something. If you were a
Except
business...
Except your new normal test has, as I think it may be the fourth factor, the ability of the Postal Service to adjust to these changes that were caused by the recession. So if the new normal thought it was going to take a few years to get to that adjustment, I don't know how Count Once can think they can turn on a dime in the midst of the recession and do it.
Well, I don't think the new normal test, by saying the ability to adjust, does not mean the ability to adjust at all. And if you were...
But then it's a pretty sort of brutal axe that you're using to say we'll count it not at all after 1 year. We're going to assume complete recovery, even though we know, see our new normal discussion, that that's not really practicable.
Well, what we're saying is while it keeps getting worse, if it gets worse, you know, if another year it gets worse and we didn't know how bad it was going to get, we're going to give you credit for that too. They didn't stop counting entirely after 1 year. And so these are different measures, and they have different effects, and they're justified on similar but not identical grounds.
I guess I'm just 11. Can you point me where they explained how they were supposed to adjust as things were still going, really concretely, as opposed to simply saying we're not going to count it, how they were supposed to adjust as things were still, you know, the bottom was still falling out, and the next year they were supposed to have adjusted to those dramatic drops in mail volume?
They didn't explain expressly how they're supposed to adjust, because the commission's role is not to direct the Postal Service or say that what they're supposed to do. They did point out, incidentally, in the necessary part of the analysis, that the Postal Service is trumpeting a lot of measures that they did take and that they were able to cut costs during the recession.
I know, but you just told me we don't look at that with respect to causation.
Well, I'm telling you that if the Postal Service was in fact able to adjust, then that should be relevant to the question of whether they should have been expected to adjust. I'm not saying that you have that the two are perfectly aligned.
Yes, it's not even perfect. It's hard to sort of understand the path of decision making when they're over here telling us both in the new normal and in the necessary section that the bottom is still falling out. And the Postal Service is laboring under a heavy load it can never do anything with anyhow, given its existing obligations. And yet it was supposed to respond very, very quickly under your Count Once rule. It just seems to me to be in substantial tension with the new normal and the necessary analysis that you're pointing to. And I'm looking for, you said not they didn't deal with it explicitly. Didn't they, given their reasoning in new normal about causation and given their necessary reason about the realities and the burdens that the Postal Service is laboring under, didn't they have to say something more than, we don't know what, but we think they could have done something after 1 year as the bottom was falling out?
Well, if you look at the specific reasoning, there's nothing in the reasoning of the necessary part that would contradict the idea that they were able to do something during the recession, because, as I pointed out...
Well, there's plenty there, because they have a lot of heavy weights that they're already carrying that they simply cannot get out of. There's things they can't shed. There are costs they have to bear, responsibilities they have to execute that are very non-economical, I mean, not in any sort of productive manner.
That would place limitations on what they could do, mm-hmm. But what the Postal Service is asking for is to say, during the recession, while the recession is still going on, what you should assume is that we are doing nothing to cut our costs, because we want to count the contribution losses, in other words, the delta between, you know, revenues and incremental costs for each individual piece of mail. We want to count all of it that happens during the recession as due to the recession, with no mitigating measures assumed in there whatsoever. Now, there's
but
nothing...
I think they took care of that in the new normal analysis. Look, it's going to take a little bit of time, but we're expecting you to get here a lot earlier than you, Postal Service, think you should have to get here. We're not giving you the 2014 or that. We're giving you a very short window But one of the whole reasons we know it's a new normal is we think that's the point at which you could have adapted. That's what they said.
Well, that's the point. That's the point when we expect you to entirely adapt going forward. And so if there's another sort of ordinary recession, then we're not going to start counting mail volume again. But what we're talking about with count once is not stopping counting altogether. We're just it's really, if you look at the numbers that the commission came up with, they didn't say, well, you lost some revenue in 2008, but that's it. That's the end. That would be intention to say that, and then also to say there's a new normal, which is later, then that would be internally contradictory. But that's not what the commission is saying. What the commission is saying is the fact that there might be an additional big volume decline the next year, we don't expect you to be able to plan for that because your models weren't working, the economy was still going down, and this was still, you know, we were still in this, you know, circumstance. Now the question, so with the new normal, what they say is, and there's been a lot of focus on the first two factors, but the ability to adjust and the predictability of the models, and the Postal Service's witness said that the predictability of the models was what he would describe as the new normal. But so the new normal is talking about, okay, going forward, we expect you to be back to a scheme in which you can adapt to circumstances as they're changing. And that's just the end point for the whole thing. It's not inconsistent to say there's an end point to the whole thing, a hard end point. Everything, every number after that end point is zero.
But what the problem that I have with the count test is that it just doesn't really kind of make what my grandmother would say good horse sense. In that if you have, take the example of the woman who loses her job during the recession and can't get cable anymore, has to cut her cable subscription. And then, you know, a couple years later, she gets her job back or she gets another job and she resumes cable. But what you're saying is that, well, for the first year, those 12 pieces of mail that are lost, yeah, you can count those. But for the second year, you can't. But when you just look at it kind of like individually like that, and there's, you know, millions of individuals who fall within that sort of a circumstance, why is it legitimate to kind of count the first year but not the second? I mean, exactly what changes that makes it kind of illegitimate for the Postal Service to count that second year of you know, lost mail for that individual, and you have, you know, millions of individuals like that.
Well, there's two problems with looking at the situation that way. But just to back up for 1 second, of course, the commission isn't claiming that, you know, the count once rule perfectly and exactly on the nose identifies what was and wasn't due to the recession, what should and shouldn't have been responded to under the statutory scheme. As we know, this is a complicated question. The commission is trying to do the best it can with the models that were presented. But just to turn specifically to that hypothetical, one problem with it is that some of the recession-based losses are like that, but some of the recession-based losses are somebody who, in 2012, she was going to stop paying her cable bill by mail anyway. She stopped a year early because of the recession. And so you have the Postal Service has identified a potential undercounting problem in, suppose there's a person who would have kept doing the cable bills for several years but didn't. There's also that with the commission's approach, there's a potential undercounting problem with the Postal Service's approach, which is suppose there's somebody who stopped doing it during the recession, but that stream of mail was just not going to be there in perpetuity anyway. And so this is
Mr. Levy just said that wasn't part of your analysis, that he pointed to the place in the record where you all said we don't think there was any sort of intersection between the recession causing people to expedite electronic diversion.
I think that the passage that was quoted by my colleague was in a different context and had a different meaning. The portion I'm talking to is on page, I believe, 2006 of the order, where the Postal Service said, it's now widely accepted that mail volumes will never again achieve 2006 levels. The record in this case indicates that although the Great Recession accelerated that volume decline, the Great Recession cannot be found to have caused that inevitable long-term continuing downward volume trend. Now, the point that my colleague was pointing to on a different page of the order was really focused on the last clause of that sentence that I just read to you, which is that the commission rejected the idea that because of the recession there was a sort of permanent change in the trend, and that's why the commission rejected the trend variable that the Postal Service identified, which said any downward trend in mail volumes that begins around the time of the recession, we will attribute to the recession, without any further evidence that that was in fact the cause. And the commission said no, and that's the portion my colleague quite rightly was pointing to. The commission rejected that and said, we're not saying that electronic diversion sort of took an entirely different path as a long-term trend because of the recession. But the point that's made on page 2006 of the order, and the point that I'm making now, is that it could accelerate, you know, in a small window, the amount that of mail that left the system. And if that happens, then it would be to the extent that what we're talking about is that, and the Postal Service concedes that to some extent, and they made no effort to quantify it, we are talking about that. It would be inappropriate to keep counting that as additional losses to the recession every year.
What did the commission find the Postal Service could do within 1 year? They can't change their service obligations. Presumably it takes some time, more than a year, to start closing post offices and laying off workers. And the volume is still going down, because we're still in the free fall stage of the recession. So when you say that there was something they could have done, what did the commission identify?
Well, the commission didn't take on the responsibility of telling the Postal Service how to do it. But if you look, for example, at 2042 of the Joint Appendix and 2043 and 2044, these are graphs. This is in the necessary part of the analysis, but these are graphs. And what they show is changes in volume and changes in various types of work hours worked by the Postal Service. And you see there are some lines going down in terms of work hours during the period, and we're not talking about the new normal here, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, red bars going down. And so
bars remotely enough to cover the loss of volume? I mean, it just didn't seem to me that mathematically that those were remotely enough to make up for the loss volume year over year. I mean, you'd have to do a lot of laying off and closing down to cover for the sheer value of the lost volume in mail. And so to say count once when you know from this evidence that they're not parallel at all seems to me troublesome.
Well,
but I'm not great at math, so if I got the math wrong,
well, here's the problem. If you think about the alternatives that were put to the commission, the Postal Service said, count everything cumulatively always. That was their position. And there were some problems with that position. There's the problem of acceleration that I discussed. There's the problem that presumes that the business will just operate exactly the same as it has, during the entire recession, and then only begin to adjust after the recession is over. So the commission identified some problems, and commenters identified some problems. So if you said, we're just going to count everything always, I think there's good reason to believe that would be an overcount. Now, the Postal Service has the burden here, as the commission made clear.
But the commission's going to have a justification for its decision. It doesn't get to go, everybody gave us bad advice, so we're going to just drop a rule down without any particular rational explanation. And what I read the commission as saying was, we've got to go with count once because we can't think of any other time limit, and we're going to think that the Postal Service can be adapting. Those were the two rationales that I saw, both of which seemed to me inconsistent with the new normal, which addressed both of those same factors, a time limit and an ability to adapt. So I don't think it helps just to say other people weren't given us, we didn't like their rules either. They offer justifications that seem internally inconsistent.
The fact that the same reasons that might have some of the same reasons that motivated the new normal also motivated the count once rule isn't a defect in the commission's order. The question, so putting aside the new normal and just talking about 2010, and we're trying to estimate volumes in 2010, assume we're in a class of math that that's not in the new normal. So we're just trying to estimate, best estimate for 2010. The commission concluded, and rightly, that to say all cumulative volume losses since 2008 would be an overcount for 2010 because you're going to count some acceleration that you shouldn't be counting because you're not accounting for the possibility at all that the Postal Service would change anything that it's doing to not recover as much money. And so they say, okay, that's an overcount. Now, we're not going to do an overcount. We said that the maximum should be whatever the Postal Service can demonstrate that they actually lost due to the recession. That's what they said in the previous order. And so then they say, okay, now the Postal Service, if you can provide us a way to demonstrate, to do our job and figure out what is due to the recession, isolate, you know, if they could have isolated the acceleration, other things, then, you know, we could come up with a different estimate. But we don't want to do an overcount. We said we weren't going to do an overcount based on the data that the Postal Service provided to us. They have a burden to show that they're not asking for more than they're entitled to. And so then they said, okay, how are we going to do it? I admit they didn't have a ton of great options. But the count once rule basically says we're going to say that, you know, the first year that you lose mail volume could be a lot of mail volume. We're going to credit. We're going to say that's an extraordinary or exceptional circumstance. It's due to the extraordinary exceptional circumstance. We're going to count it. If it lingers for several years, we're not going to count it. Now, you could say there should be a different rule. It should have been 2 years. It should have been a year and a half. The Postal Service didn't say any of those things, and neither did anybody else. And if it was 2 years, I would be up here trying to defend why they should be able to do it in 2 years rather than 1 year or 3 years or a year and a half. This is something within the Commission's authority, both in terms of interpreting what the statute that it was tasked with administering and in terms of making technical judgments about the admittedly imperfect record that was presented to the Commission. And we submit that that was reasonable.
Shouldn't there be something in the record in that those two pages that justified count once, I think JA 2005 and 2006, that explains why, you know, what data they're relying upon to say count once instead of count for 2 years or count for 1.3 years or something else? What is there for me to latch onto to say that, okay, that's the data that they had to support, you know, counting it in the first year as opposed to for counting it for 2 years? How do I know that this wasn't just arbitrary, in other words?
If that was the argument, if the argument that was put to them was 1 year is the wrong amount of years, it should be 2 years, then you would expect the Commission to justify 1 year versus 2 years. What happened was the mailers and the public representative and other commenters were saying you shouldn't accumulate these. It was, you know, the Postal Service's numbers were done year by year by year by year. And the Postal Service said, add them all up, and everybody else said, don't add them all up. And so the Commission selected among the choices that was put to it, explained why it was making the choice that it made. If the Commission had come out, even if it had looked at, you know, all of the data, there wasn't a lot of data submitted that would support 2 years or a year and a half or 19 months. If the Commission had come out and said, all right, well, we think counting all of it is too much, but, you know, 1 year is the wrong number, we pick another number, I would be up here explaining why that wasn't arbitrary and capricious. If the parties had said, if the Postal Service had said, you know, we really think you should count it for a year and a half, and the Commission had, without any reasoning, rejected that, then Your Honor's point would be right and would have to be sent back. But what happened here is the Postal Service said, we want to count it all of it always, in fact, going forward to 2020 or whatever it was. And the Commission said, no. And then so that's, you know, the count once rule. Then you get to the new normal.
And can I ask a procedural question? I'm sorry you didn't ask it. But when your decision came out picking count once and with your four-factor new normal test, is there a procedural mechanism by which they could have sought reconsideration and raised, well, not 1 year, it should at least be two or three, or, whoa, we didn't know where those four factors came, or was there no opportunity? Is there no opportunity under rules for that?
I don't believe there's an explicit opportunity. The Commission has entertained reconsideration requests in the past, you know, based on its discretion.
Did anybody try reconsideration here?
No, there was no reconsideration in this case. Okay. And again, you know, that's not, you know, there was a reference earlier to the new normal test coming out of nowhere. We cited in our brief a number, and by no means all, mm-hmm. of the times that the parties were discussing this, and the very question was, at some point, is there a new normal? And if so, do you stop counting at that point? Now, in terms of the specifics of the new normal test, I mean, this is some, this is, as Your Honor pointed out, this is related to some of the factors that influenced the count once, but it's a different, it leads to a slightly different result. But basically, what the commission was saying and what the Postal Service said was, look, when our models start working again, we're back to, you know, when the recession is not reducing mail volumes anymore, our models start working again, then we're in a different situation. We're not in the extraordinary circumstance anymore. That's the essence of the new normal analysis. And that's a reasonable judgment to draw. It's not the question. And, of course, the presumption of the Postal Service is that the only reason the new normal is new rather than the old normal is the recession. Now, that, of course, is not true because we know, as we've been discussing, there are a number of factors that could that were at play in this period, all interlocking, that brought mail volumes down in a way, and they don't think that they're ever going to come back. And the Postal Service says that that's all the recession, but the commission was not required to accept that at face value and say, you're right, it's all the recession, none of it's electronic diversion, none of it's any other factor that might cause people to send less mail. And they basically just called an endpoint. And the Postal Service hasn't come in and demonstrated that a different endpoint would have been appropriate. They think it should have been later. But the way the commission went about it was reasonable.
Just help me understand exactly how the commission articulates the tests it's due to test based on remand. They came up with this net causation. Is that a but-for cause with all the other but-for causes stripped out? Is it a unique version of proximate cause? What is it a sole cause? And, you know, is the Postal Service's job to identify what is solely attributable to the recession? What do they mean by net as a practical matter in this case?
Well, the net in particular is really that if you have, I mean, there is some artificiality to attributing any piece of mail decline to a single cause. But the way this proceeded on the assumption, which turned out to be the correct assumption, that the way the Postal Service would try to prove its case would be to provide an econometric model that would...
I know there's all kinds of econometric models in here. I'm just trying to figure out what the end game was. Was it, doesn't that mean peel out everything else?
Right.
Because there are things that what happens to something you just can't tell? There's 50-50 causation for some factor. How does that fall under their net cause test?
If you can't tell, then because the Postal Service has the burden of establishing it, I would say that the commission's reasoning suggests that you wouldn't credit that.
But what if it's not a can't tell for lack of evidence? It's a coinciding forces. You know, somebody, two guns being fired at the same time. How would that factor into here? Because it seemed to me that's some of what the tension is in the different views in this case.
Well, that's sort of why I went to the econometric model, because the way the econometric model works is it takes a number of factors and says, okay, we know the volume in year one was X, we know the volume in year Y was, you know, in year two was Y, you know, we're trying to explain the difference. And then for each variable in the model, it says, okay, it went down this much because of declines in employment, and went up this much because of increases in population. And now nobody thinks that the econometric model is perfectly saying that exactly that happened, but that's the best estimate. But so at the end of the day, what you have is a set, and what we had in this case is a set of variables, and some of them are self-evidently recession-related employment. Some of them are self-evidently not recession-related population. And then you had a fight about, okay, with these other variables, which of them should we treat as recession-related and which of them should we treat as not recession-related? And that just comes down to a line-drawing problem. The commission just had to make some determinations. Admittedly, there's no perfect answer here. But what they said was the Postal Service is saying any trend, downward trend, permanent downward trend that starts around the time of the recession, that's recession-related. The commission said no, gave an example. In periodicals, for example, there was a downward trend starting in 2011. The commission said, okay, but isn't that when tablets and e-readers started getting popular and when people start having fewer magazine subscriptions because of that? So a downward trend, you know, just a straight downward trend starting at a point in time, Your proof is not good enough. We're not attributing that to the recession. Then there's another category. This is the one the mailers are complaining about. There's a variable, and it's not a straight downward trend for all of time. It goes down while the recession is hitting, and it comes back up or starts getting less bad when the recession starts easing. And the commission said, okay, can't know for certain, but we think that one is good enough. Obviously, you could draw the line in a different place, but that's why we have an expert agency here that draws these lines. And the commission said, at the end of the day, we think that the one that goes down for all time is out. The one that goes down and then up again, we're going to attribute to the recession. That's a reasonable conclusion based on the evidence. And that, as a practical matter, that's how the commission was resolving these questions. Unless there are any further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I know everyone was out of time, but we will permit 2 minutes of rebuttal if it's needed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Like any lawyer, I think it's needed. 3 points. First, just on the count once rule, I think the critical thing to understand is that the count once rule is an error that barely rises above the level of a mathematical error that is applied after they've made other adjustments to the numbers. So at the point that they've already, you could quibble whether our 4.3 trend line for electronic diversion is right or not, but when you get those raw numbers, after applying those factors and the parts of the model they credit, then in the first year of the recession, you get a certain amount of lost volume that's attributable to the recession. The second year, another additional loss, and then the whole problem here comes down to the simple difference between additional incremental losses and total cumulative losses. It really is as simple as when they add 1 and 2, they get 2, because that second year, they only are going to count that incremental million-dollar loss in my hypothetical, million-volume loss in my hypothetical, and they won't count that other loss, and it just doesn't make any sense. On the new normal, so on this, what I would say is, my learned colleague on the other side says the heart of the new normal is to predict the point at which things sort of stabilize and all of the predictability comes back in. If that's what the heart of the new normal is, then they pick the wrong factors. The point at which predictability comes in, that's not a bad factor. I'd quibble. I'd say that belongs in the necessary analysis. But if you're looking for the point at which things have stabilized in a new normal, you don't look for the bottom of the trough. And if I could suggest this, that the reason there is this misfit is that oftentimes the procedural requirements of the APA and avoiding substantive error are linked at the hip. I would respectfully submit if they had put the new normal on the table in Order 864, which was the order immediately after the remand, where they tell everybody, here's how we're going to do this remand. If they put the new normal on the table, I think there would have been an opportunity to explain why the new normal didn't work, why those four factors aren't the right factors. But as the commission themselves recognizes in the order, nobody submitted comments about the new normal. Well, you know why? Nobody knew it was coming down the pike. And sure, we talked about the new normal as part and parcel of the reason why there were continuing losses due to the recession. But we didn't get a chance to take a shot at this misfitted test that basically looks at the trough of the recession and then says that if that's the point at which no more losses whatsoever, even though things are clearly still impacted by the Great Recession. The last point I'd simply make is on electronic diversion, I'd ask you to just take a look at Joint Appendix page 1700, 1705, because what it shows is it shows what happens if you accept the mailer's argument that this is all about electronic diversion. Because as we pointed out, this is Thress's reply to the commission, what you get if you basically try to graph electronic diversion under their numbers, that it explains everything, is you get numbers for electronic diversion, a graph for electronic diversion, that looks just like the Great Recession. It tanks in 2008 and 2009, and then by 2010 and 2011, it's recovering. I don't think anybody has a coherent explanation that that's the way electronic diversion works. And I do think that at bottom, we have accounted for electronic diversion to the tune of 39 billion pieces of mail, and I think the rest of it really was due to the Great Recession. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clement. Mr. Quinn, do you need 2 minutes? Oh, I'm sorry.
Levy.
Mr. Levy, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong
thing. No offense. 2 points. First of all, on the question of whether there was notice that the posters would have to prove the extent to which it could adapt its costs, the extent to which mail volume losses were due to other things, the extent to which the recession would attenuate. In Order 547, which is one of the decisions in the first case, the Postal Service said, as a direction to the I'm sorry, the commission said as a direction to the Postal Service on remand, inclusion of any volume loss prior to the beginning of the recession or experienced after the close of the recession in an analysis of the impact of extraordinary or exceptional circumstances would appear to be problematic. That's on page 125 of the appendix. And then the commission's brief also discusses additional warnings the Postal Service received about the significance of this issue in this case itself. Second of all, about electronic diversion. Yes, the Postal Service's model assumed a billion pieces of mail were lost to electronic diversion, but that assumption assumed a linear continuation of a pre-existing trend. It assumed away any acceleration of electronic diversion. We put in extensive evidence in the record, which we cited in our brief, showing that electronic diversion exploded beginning in 2007, and the commission credited that. That's the kind of judgment that where the agency really is entitled to deference. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case will be submitted.